Representative Jim Abler gets the gold star for today.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
House File 2418, Representative Severson, do you want to come on up and present your bill?
Madam Chair, I'll move the bill.
All right. Representative Abler moves the bill for consideration.
There's an amendment.
Okay, and there's an amendment, too.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I have one amendment for this bill I'd like to get attached before
right.
to get it in the final form.
Can I move the amendment, Madam Chair?
It's the, which, is it the 0947?
AO40947? Yes, ma'am.
All right, Representative Abler moves the AO40947 amendment. We cannot take action on that because we do not have a quorum right now, so... why don't you go ahead and explain your bill? We may have to explain this bill a couple of times.
All right.
But you can practice on us.
Well, I'll get it right as we go along here.
All right.
Madam Chair and members, I want to thank you for the opportunity to hear this this bill this morning. It's an exciting bill. It's part of the Governor's Initiative for Excellence in Education. It really provides for our public education institutions an avenue of what I'm going to call an avenue of excellence for providing for very motivated and talented students to excel in four particular areas that are included in this bill: math, leadership, science, and performing arts. And the bill itself speaks to the coordinating committee that's going to be put forward to in each of these disciplines to begin to develop the curriculum necessary to formulate the program. And the program is pretty much on a voluntary basis with the thought in process to identify and to locate those kids who are really interested in a specific area and then bring them along in a curriculum that is formed by the coordinating board to meet benchmarks, and at the end of those benchmarks to receive a Scholar of Distinction award. And that can be in terms of financial incentives, which would be generated through local funds of business interests that would be participating in the committee as well. I have four individuals who are going to testify today and who have been working on this project for a considerable amount of time and are excited to be able to be here and testify to the committee today. So with that, I'll turn it over to Dr. Nelson to bring up to speed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we're very excited to tell you about this bill because we think it demonstrates a good use of resources, and it's something with which we won't have to start from ground zero. Doesn't that sound like a good thing? In the interest of academic excellence, we have had developed at the department some years ago this program that was conceived earlier, and it was called How Can We Help Students Develop Academic Excellence at any grade and supplement what they get in the classroom. So Beth Downey, the Director of Academic Standards and Professional Development, was actually a part of how these frameworks were developed for students and how they were developed so that they could be used easily in schools and help promote students at any grade level being able to think about, for example, with science, what does it mean to be a scholar of distinction in science? How do scientists think? Why is this important? What might be experiences I could do? And what might I do as a high school student to earn an award or a scholarship related to being a scholar of distinction for science? I'd like to talk a little bit in broad scale about how this would work before we get to the specific frameworks for each of the areas. What we're looking to do is to develop through the coordination of the department, or I should really say as a helper role, we are looking for an organization of esteem, an organization that's credible in the state that's already established, such as McAllister College, such as Intermediate District 287, who have already stepped to the plate with two of the Scholars of Distinction program. So how it would work is an organization of esteem would say, I would like to be part of helping to sponsor this for all of the students across the state. And what they do when they say they'll sponsor it is they then agree to handle the logistics of the award. They will pull together an advisory committee. This committee will have representatives from higher ed, from teachers, from business people. It'll be a community-based program, but the key comment there, or the key unifier, I guess I'd say, is that they're all people very much interested in, say, that content area, science. And then they would look at this framework that's been developed some years ago, as 287 has done. They'll testify. They'll update it. They'll make sure it's reflecting our new academic standards, and it extends our academic standards beyond. And then what they'll do is handle the logistics of how to communicate this to schools, how to collect applications for the award, how to convene a panel. It could be a different panel from time to time to look at the criteria for the award and determine on as much as you can an objective basis using the criteria which students should get the Scholars of Distinction Award. So in the sense we're not creating new bureaucracy, in the sense we're trying to find organizations already existing who are committed to this. And by the way, we already have an organization that has picked the geography Scholars of Distinction up. That's why that's not in the bill. It's going, it's up and running, it's a successful model. We're wanting to take the frameworks that have already been developed for math, science, and theater arts, that's the cost savings in a sense, pull an advisory committee with an organization of esteem to look at these, and then start to implement them. Science is the next farthest along. Intermediate District 287 is here. They have looked at the framework. They've updated it. They're now ready to implement. They need some dollars with which to implement this to expand to all students, things like scholarships and outreach activities. Theater arts framework is done, needs to be updated, and then have the logistics. And we don't have a sponsoring agency for the theater arts yet. And the new one that is not yet developed, not even the framework yet, is leadership. There's been a lot of interest on the part of people associated with this to develop that as another aspect of a Scholar of Distinction. So I hope that's clear in terms of the broad level how this umbrella would work, and I'd like to turn it to Beth Downey, who will describe the framework and how it works for a student. That's where the excitement is.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Beth Downey. I'm Director of Academic Standards and Professional Development at the Minnesota Department of Education. I'd like to talk, before I get into the details of the framework, mention the purpose of the overall program, which, as Marianne alluded to, is to nurture and recognize distinguished achievement by highly motivated students in various areas of expertise or specialties. We call them specialties. These specialties may be developed in three different kinds of areas. One is the academic disciplines, such as math or science. A second area where we could have a specialty is talent development. Leadership has been suggested in our bill as an example of that. Or a career-related field, like photojournalism or agribusiness. So specialties can be in a variety of areas. The frameworks that Assistant Commissioner Nelson referenced are really important documents in this program. The framework describes the nature of the expertise. What does it mean to have scientific expertise, for example? And why does society think scientific expertise is important? The framework talks about ways to develop all the different kinds of intelligence associated with that area of expertise. We know that in-school learning is not enough to develop expertise in any particular area. So the framework talks about the kinds of curriculum experiences that help develop that expertise, but also the things you can do outside the curriculum. Hobbies, activities, field trips with your family, things you could do with a mentor, things you could do with an older brother or sister. So it describes a variety of activities both in school and outside of school. And for that reason, a Scholar of Distinction specialty could be sponsored by a school district, a particular school, or something outside of a school, a 4-H club, or some other kind of organization. schools or other kinds of organizations decide which specialties they want to offer. They could do one or they could do more than one. But as we said, only applied geography is up and running so far. A third part of the framework talks about how students will be judged as to whether they have achieved the requirements for scholars of distinction. And those requirements have to include at least two important criteria. The first is the student has to provide evidence that they have mastered very sophisticated kinds of knowledge associated with that specialty. So you have to know your science if you're going to become a scholar of distinction. You can demonstrate that on a written test that is created especially for this purpose, perhaps by this coordinating board or advisory committee, or maybe an AP exam would suffice. In most of our frameworks, AP exams are good examples of how you can demonstrate your content knowledge in a specialty. The second criterion that has to be met is you have to be able to apply your knowledge and skills on very sophisticated kinds of projects. So it's not enough to know about something, you have to know how to apply it. An example from the geography section would be developing a plan for the redevelopment of an extractive site in Minnesota, such as cut-over timberland or an exhausted mine site or eroded agricultural land. Or it could be an appropriately scaled area elsewhere in the world. It doesn't have to be confined to Minnesota. So these are sophisticated kinds of projects that we are asking the students to attempt. So that's a little bit about what they would be required to do. A certification panel, which may be as simple as two experts in the area getting together. Maybe it's a panel of 10, 12. The board will figure out what that certification panel looks like. But the statewide panel determines whether a student has achieved this honor. Students can participate in Scholars of Distinction at any kind of age level, four-year-olds, three-year-olds, second graders, eighth graders. Obviously, you know, you make choices in the framework about all these experiences that you want to involve yourself with so that you are prepared when you get to high school to really demonstrate that you have met these requirements. As far as who developed these specialties, because usually that question comes up, we went to the business community and we asked for representatives from business and industry and higher education to work with K-12 and post-secondary educators on definitions of expertise. What does this really look like? We want it to reflect how society uses this expertise, and they are the ones who establish these frameworks. This particular bill provides funding to establish what is called a statewide coordinating board. Maybe we should have used the term advisory committee, because they really are going to be figuring out how this program gets implemented. And finally, we've talked about which one is up and running, so I think that's it. We've covered the major components.
Let me just ask, we've got two questions here. Is it on just the, do you want to learn a little bit more about how one of these programs is up and running? We've got Representative Greiling and Demmer. Do you want to hear a little bit more about how one of these is running, and then that might, I've got lots of questions too, but why don't we wait until we see, are you bringing up the intermediate district that's been doing this? Okay.
Madam Chair, Professor Lanigren from McAllister College is currently piloting the project for geography, and he is here to testify.
Great.
Good morning. My name is David Lanigren. I'm a professor of geography at McAllister College, and I'm coordinator of the Minnesota Alliance for Geographic Education. I'm also the coordinator of the Scholars of Distinction in Applied Geography. As was mentioned earlier, we established this program 5 or 6 years ago. The program in geography has a little different set of issues than the programs that are being proposed here, because unlike science, geography is not taught in every high school. So the Scholars of Distinction program that we developed has a parent educating component as well, and we provide mentors to students who are in high schools that don't have a high school geography course. So we have a little different issue to deal with, and I think we've accomplished that. We have, the Minnesota Alliance for Geographic Education has several programs for student enrichment. The Scholars of Distinction is the top of the pyramid. We also work with the National Geographic Society on the Geography B, and we also do a Geographer's Fair. We are expecting to begin a middle school prize program as well, geared to the proposed standards that are coming forward. We have a group of teachers and people in what I'll call geography business, but basically research and analysis businesses who serve on our committee. We created a test that could be taken on our website for students remote from the Twin Cities. And then, as is mentioned, the students do a research project with a mentor. If they can't find a mentor in their district, we provide a mentor for them. In the past, we've also placed students with in internships in the state planning and in city planning. I think the reason to do something like this is a way to recognize very talented and very motivated students in a way that isn't possible at present. We do have AP geography and AP courses in these other fields. There are various sorts of prizes and so on. But the quintessential point of the Scholars of Distinction is that it provides an opportunity for a very focused, real-world research project in these activities. So it gives the high school student a chance to become a professional and see if this is the career that is made for them or can use this experience to build on something that's gone further. The students that we worked with thus far have done a variety of projects in environmental activities, in urban planning, in school district design, just a whole host of things, immigration issues. They've all gone on to college. Unfortunately, only two have come to McAllister. I kind of view this as a way to pick the cherries out of the state, but some of those cherries go somewhere else, to Notre Dame and other relatively well-known schools. But in any case, I'm very excited about it. It's wonderful to work with these highly motivated students and their teachers. We don't provide mentors for every group because some of them have teachers in their home district to work with. It's very exciting to see these students. And our program takes about 2 years for the students to go through. They don't just come and take a test and do a project. It's a long action period, at least a year and a half. I'll be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Are there questions now for Professor Lanegren? Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sir, when you started the program, did you have any startup money from the state government or anywhere besides private funding?
Yes, we had a small grant from the state that was then matched by the National Geographic Society. But it was very small. It just funded the gatherings of the people from out of state to come into McAllister.
Thank you.
And I thank you for asking about money. We give a $500 scholarship to students who finish the program.
Okay. Representative Demmer, did you have a question for? To this issue?
It's general.
All right.
Anybody?
Go ahead.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I like this. I like this idea. I like the concept. One thing that came to mind when I saw this is National Honor Society. Does this tie in or could tie in somehow with the program we already have in place that recognizes excellence in the schools? I know that's a different type of program, but when I was looking through this, oftentimes we come with these things and realize we're almost doing parallel things. And I don't know if there'd be any thought to that or any ideas about that.
Madam Chair.
Representative Severson.
Representative Demmer, I would defer to Beth, if I could, on that one.
Madam Chair, Representative, I think of National Honor Society as being a recognition and service program. I think of Scholars of Distinction as also being a recognition program, but it's a program of educational excellence in that there's curriculum experiences and all these other kinds of in-school and out-school, out-of-school experiences that are necessary in order to earn it, whereas National Honor Society doesn't have a scholastic program from K through 12.
built in as such academic program.
I have a couple of questions for the professor. Do you have a structure that's kind of like what's explained in this legislation? You created some kind of you have a board or someone that, or groups of people that review what the scholars have done.
Yes.
And then also, do you think that with now that geography is part of the social study standards, that that will also maybe raise the level of interest and have more participation in your program?
Yes. Yes to both answers. Sorry, yes to both questions. We have a board of, it's called a steering committee for the Alliance. It's about 30 people. That's a mixture of K-12, post-secondary, and I think there are two people from the business community that are on our committee presently. We have a subcommittee that works with the scholars, and those are primarily retired high school teachers who serve as mentors. And then there, when the scholar's work is completed, it's brought to this small subcommittee of the Alliance Steering Committee that makes a judgment. And we're very excited about the new standards. We think that with the establishment of a high school geography course, this program will really blossom because it does fit very nicely with the standards as they've been described in the legislation.
Professor, what would you say the cost of running your program is? Is it a lot of in-kind work because you have retired people that are kind of doing this for the love of the subject?
Right. The cost is very, very low. It depends on how many students come through each year because we give them this $500 scholarship. And we provide mileage for the mentors that go out state to work. So it's roughly $3,000 at the most, again, depending on how many scholarships. National Geographic has embraced this program, so we're looking forward to spending a lot more money, but it will be the scholarship prize money that we're looking forward to spending. The costs are very, very low.
Professor, how many students have participated in
at this
program?
Point, we've had 7 students go through.
Okay.
And through to the end to go on to university.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, this is to Ms. Arnie. Ms. Arnie, I'm looking at page 2, line 4, the sentence that talks about the coordinating boards are required to seek permanent funding. If they create a lobbying team that sits here at the legislature while we're in session and in this committee in particular, have they fulfilled that requirement, or just what kind of seeking are you asking, and where do you envision these sources of permanent funds to come from?
Well, I may be employing some wishful thinking here, Representative, but we're hoping, and when I say we, the Challenge Task Force that created this concept, we're hoping for outside funding, funding from business foundations. For example, I can't name them here, but I've had interest indicated from at least 3 corporations that if we went ahead with a Science Scholars of Distinction, they want to have their name attached to it. They'd be interested in working with us on that. And also one corporation that's interested in the Mathematics Scholars of Distinction. They think it's in their own best interest to inculcate a sense of that specialty, a sense of mathematics, a sense of science, so they can produce more students graduating with that as a major and then hopefully get employed at their workplace. So we're hoping the money would come through private or corporate sponsorship.
Madam Chair.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm not going to offer an amendment, but to the author, I wonder if on line 5 between the words permanent and funding, you might not consider inserting the words non-public.
Representative Severson, do you have a comment on that? Or do you wish to...
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would agree with that amendment. I would not take that as a hostile amendment. Actually, last night I was at a function and talked to one of the executives that had given the briefing on the bioscience that they gave to the legislature about 2.5 weeks ago. And he said that 3 of the major bioscience companies that are incorporated in this area are looking at expanding their businesses between 7 and 10,000 employees. And what they're really looking for is people with a strong math science background. And I believe that this bill creates an avenue that we can begin to find and identify motivated students who, and give them some motivation to begin to propel them into the marketplace with the equipment that they need to succeed. So I think in that conversation there was enough to say that the industry and the corporate sector is very interested in things like this. As I discussed to him, that those are some areas that we really need to work on in our public school system, and he acknowledged that. And so I think that to get that support from the community would not be a hard thing at all.
So Representative Severson, are you making a motion to do that or not?
Madam Chair, Madam Chair, having heard the comments of the author, I will make that motion on page 2, line 5, between the words permanent and funding, insert the word non-public.
Yes, Madam Chair, I would be willing to receive that as a final amendment.
All right. Is there any discussion on that? If not, all in favor of that amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposition? The amendment is adopted. We also can go back now, Representative Severson, and look at your AO40947 amendment, too, while we're at it. On page 1, lines 10, and on line 15, after mathematics, insert science.
Madam Chair, I'll move that amendment.
All right. Representative Erickson moves that amendment. Is there any discussion on that amendment? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposition? The amendment is adopted. All right. Now we have Representative Birnett. You have a question.
Thanks, Madam Chair. So for the department, it seems like after the Biskin's amendment, we're going to go to non-public funding, and we're going into some kind of quasi-arrangement here. It sounds similar to what we used to do with the Minnesota Academic Excellence Foundation, and I wonder if this is kind of, if the agency ever talked to anybody there about that being the vehicle to get this out of state government and use a private organization to do this, because I know that MAEF has the Governor's Scholars and Science and Math Institutes in the summer, and they do a lot of this recognition. And I'm not sure, we cut their funding a couple years ago. I'm not sure how strong and viable they are anymore, but I wonder if the agency did discuss this as a possibility.
Commissioner Nelson, or Assistant Commissioner Nelson.
Madam Chair, Representative Burnett, we did talk with the MAEF Foundation about this because there was a question whether or not it was the same as their Governor's Scholars, and it's very different. But I would reaffirm the legislature substantially cut back MAEF. In fact, they're barely hanging on, and there's a Friends of MAEF group that's charged with fundraising. But we think, given the experience with the National Alliance of Geography and the experience that some have testified to with private organizations, we think there are many already established organizations such as 287 and other agencies that would be very interested and maybe have a stronger financial base for resources to look to, at least initially. So we're very open to any organization that has a commitment and a passion and some funding to be able to help with this.
Assistant Commissioner, there is a blank appropriation here. What do you perceive? Are you perceiving that there would be a request for some initial monies to do what? What do you need that initial money for?
The initial monies would be used for establishing leadership, for calling together this large group of representatives across the community to draft the framework. That has not yet been done.
For each of the disciplines that you're talking about?
It's already been done. The framework, as I testified earlier, and I know it's a little complicated, but the framework has already been developed several years ago for geography, for math, for science, and for theater arts. However, because they were done several years ago, they each need to be updated. Geography is taken care of because it's found a home at McAllister. The science is being taken care of in the sense that it's found a sponsoring organization of esteem. We call that 287, and Karen Newell is here to testify about that. So they're ready to go with the logistics part. We're looking for some seed money to get them going with the scholarships while we look for broader scale donations. The math framework is done, needs to be updated and reviewed to fit our new standards, and things like this always need ongoing review. and then we want to find a home for that. Madam Chair, we have been approached by a private entity that's very interested in funding partially the math. And the leadership is the only one that has not yet been developed as a framework. So we do believe with some careful and prudent planning, the monies needed, we could streamline down as much as we can while still getting a quality product. And then, as Representative Biskins inserted with the agreement of the author, that we would look for permanent funding from non-public sources.
Okay. Well, why don't we have, it's Ms. Newell?
It is.
From 287?
Yes.
All right. Why don't we hear your testimony and experience with 287?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Representatives, my name is Karen Newell. I'm the project leader of the Scholars of Distinction in Science initiative that, and I do want to clarify, it is not just Intermediate District 287. 287 is acting as the fiscal agent to represent a consortium of the three intermediates in the metro area, 287, Intermediate District 916, and Intermediate District 917. We have a history of working together on a number of projects like this, and so our name is the first on the list, and often I just wanted to make sure that you understand that it is not solely Intermediate District 287, although it's housed at our... and working with our partners on this, I think it's important for the committee to understand that we have a, and I'm just speaking about the science scholars now, our partners on this include funding from, the major funding has come from the Medtronic Foundation and from 3M, who have, in their wisdom, given us the seed money really to begin. And it started with a matching grant. We have other esteemed partners in the business community and in the academic communities as well. A major partner in this for the Scholars of Distinction has been the Minnesota Academy of Science. As an in-kind partnership for this, they have provided us their website and their webmaster. We have very parallel types of goals for students, and that critical pathway concept, building pathways to careers and excellence in science, is realized because of this work. We also are partnering with Hamline University, with their College of Global and Environmental Education, and the University of Minnesota Centrum, which is the rather the clearinghouse. The Centrum has been very helpful in helping us find matches and support for students who are pursuing excellence. One of the reasons that we came to this project was the work of the mentorship connection in our district. 287 and District 916 both have mentorship connections, formalized programs where students are working together in the community with a mentor or mentors to formulate a project, a passion of theirs, and through that mentorship relationship, work at advanced levels of learning and skill. And we saw a number of our students from the mentorship connection initially be joined to the Scholars of Distinction and Applied Geography program because that was their mentorship focus. And we saw the really unique opportunity. There are so many of our kids involved in science. We have, at 287, we have over 100 students involved in this mentorship program. And I would say that the fully 60% of them are involved in science mentorships, working with researchers at the university, working in private industry, working in educational settings, investigating science as the scientists do. And it's so exciting for us. Part of this entire package, aside from the wonderful award and our hope to recognize these scholars, a critical piece of this is the development of the pathways that lead students to this excellence. And that begins much earlier in their educational life. Our connection with the Scholars of Distinction, our connection with the Minnesota Academy of Science helps us to at least reach a part of the audience which is involved in the science fair process. To be a scholar, you don't have to be involved in the science fair process, but many of our kids are. And that's the nest where so many of the kids begin to show the passion that they have and to formally present and share with the entire community the work that they're doing investigating. The Minnesota Academy of Science also sponsors, as one of its programs, the Junior Science and Humanities Symposium in the fall, where students are invited to come and share papers that they have done, learning the process of scientific research and writing, the technical writing aspect of it, and that is another source of our potential pool of scholars. An exciting thing for us and an aspect that we think is very special to the science scholars is that students do not have to be in the metro area to apply for this. They don't have to be involved in the science fair process. It's all done online, and students prepare their work. They reach the very stringent criteria. There are 7 criteria for achieving this, but it's done in their local community, and it's evaluated initially in their own community using guidelines from the International Science Fair. We use the ISCF, Science and Engineering Fair. We use their guidelines and their strict patterns for making sure that the people reviewing student work are qualified, and those are our guidelines as well. But students apply online, and it's all done through the Academy's website, and they are hosting that for us. So we are reaching immediately a very broad group of scholars. It's not limited just to the kids living in the metro area. And those pathways can only continue to develop movement toward this. So we're trying to be extremely inclusive of the entire state from the start, even though it is a pilot that has begun in the metro area. And
how
students
many,
who are applying, we have a pool
students?
Of about 10 right now.
Yeah, okay.
This is the weekend of the, this coming weekend is the Twin Cities Regional Science Fair, and the State Science Fair is in March. And at that time, I have a feeling that students who have done well and who are excited by that process will be applying.
Great, thank you. Before we move on, I do want to recognize we have, I think, is it the ninth graders from Champlin High School here? Yeah, all right. We got a reaction there. Somebody's awake up there. Welcome. Thank you for coming. We're talking today about establishing a program that will recognize students that really get involved in math, science, leadership, fine arts in really involved ways and receiving scholarships and public honor for being involved in that. So we hope that all of you sitting there will be interested in, and possibly get involved in the future if this program goes forward. All right, do you have any other? Oh, Representative Mariana, you had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I think I totally agree with the whole pathways concept here, and there's a bunch of research, or there's growing research that shows that these kind of activities actually can have some terrific blowback in terms of K-12 performance, which is what we're, you know, this committee in particular is concerned with. And so it sounds like you've articulated some of the, what I've heard, some of the good practices that these kind of programs can offer, not only in terms of career development and but also in terms of creating the kind of inspiration and energy and motivation for students to do well in their current K-12 setting. My question is, and then I have another very quick thing, my question is, for the program itself, what can you tell me about the diversity of students that have participated in the program, and if that's an issue, what are some of the thoughts in terms of...
Professor Lanigren, you can come on up to the table, too. I hear you. Look, see you waving your hand.
Well, it's always nice to answer one of Carlos's questions, since he always has to have to answer mine.
Not very well.
We've been quite successful in reaching a diverse population, Representative Mariana. We had 7 of these go through, and 2 of them were students of color, and if I remember right, it was 5 females and 2 males within the group. So it has the potential of being crafted to match a very diverse population and diverse sets of interests.
So Ms. Newell, do you have any statistics?
We have no data at this point because we're still receiving participants, but that is our hope as well. And the fact, I think, our electronic connection and the ability to reach a broad population of students, it seems that I think we are just split half and half, male and female, of the current applicants. So, and I don't know yet about the gender issue or about the race issue.
And Madam Chair, I had the opportunity to meet with some folks in Medtronics a couple of weeks ago and have had discussions with folks at 3M, some of your supporters, and I know that, you know, that's a particular concern for them.
Yes.
And they have pretty strong advocate groups within their corporations that are looking to, you know, are looking out for their future in terms of being able to draw from a diverse workforce. I just want to say real quickly that, you know, this brings to mind to me a bunch of other things that are kind of floating around there. And, Madam Chair, I'm really glad that we, Stevenson, that we have this bill and we're having this opportunity to have this kind of discussion. I hope we have more of it in the future. You know, what is the relationship between these kind of programs and our goals here at K-12? Because I really do think that they're quite promising. And, you know, some of the other groups that I'm aware of is there's the Minnesota Council on Economic Education. Mm-hmm. I serve on their board, and they're doing some pretty terrific work in terms of introducing education concepts. Different than this program, clearly, but, you know, the same kind of orientation.
I agree with you on that one, too, Representative Mark.
Okay, and then there's also in the Higher Ed Committee, for years we funded a summer scholarship program through the Higher Ed Services Office to provide scholarships for students that could participate in summer programs similar to these. And unfortunately that wasn't eliminated, but that did suffer cuts in the last budget round. And so, you know, we should probably be having discussions with our brethren in the Higher Ed Committee to similarly support these kind of efforts. And then there's the emerging Minnesota P16 collaborative, which is both public and private, K-12 and higher ed. And I know that at an upcoming meeting that they're having in April, they're going to tackle some of these, you know, sort of broad general issues. And so you may want to be in touch with those. Well, you're there at the table, Assistant Commissioner, so you know. And then, so I guess what I'm pointing at or trying to direct to is that I think it behooves this body to think about not only supporting good programs like these, but think about perhaps a comprehensive way in which we can help them all interconnect with one another and then provide support for one another. And then I do have one final thing, and it's a question of Professor Lannigan. And I want to know, Professor, are the students any smarter in McAllister? Now or later, and think before you answer the question.
No, that's a real easy question. The students at McAllister have always been brilliant.
I think that was a loaded question. Assistant Commissioner, you had a comment.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I wanted to also stress when we visited with Representative Searson, he challenged us that from his experience that these kinds of programs sometimes aren't known by students in public schools, and what can we do at the department to help publicize this so that we get a broader representation, not only in diverse but in numbers. And we think we can do that by our pipelines and our working with superintendents and our email system. We've got a lot of good communication vehicles, and we would really like to do that, assuming the program gets your endorsement.
And I also want to echo Representative Mariani's statements too, and also hope that, you know, as you're, you know, relooking at your framework and bringing it up to date too, and maybe this was already part of your original goals, but to really look at aggressive strategies for involving minority students in these programs, because it's one thing to just say, well, yeah, we've got 2 out of 5, but or whatever, but, and I, that's not any criticism on you at all, Professor, but just to, as we're going forward, to, you know, to always think about, are we doing enough aggressively to give kids opportunities? Because I just, after being at your meeting was it last Friday already? Or
that seems
a couple of Fridays ago. You know, it really drove home. We had some really good seminars afterwards that, you know, talked about, you know, some real, you know, we talk about it a lot, but, you know, I think there was still this undercurrent of frustration that we don't have aggressive enough strategies as we're implementing these programs. So, yes, Ms. Newell.
Madam Chair, parallel to the announcement of the Scholars of Distinction in Science, Science Centrum announced their Teachers of Distinction in Science. And so we have they have an initiative going, working with teachers, offering them the opportunity of working and improving their skills and contacts. So I see a wonderful connection there and an ability to work with our partners to have a broader opportunity to reach students and their teachers and families.
So. Good. Representative Mariani, well, I'll let you wind up this conversation.
Brief, I often raise issues with students of color and communities of color. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this is an area where I think the other thing we have to think about is how do we help create these kind of opportunities for all students. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for better or for worse, in the past, we've tended, I think, in some of these programs, I'm not saying that's the case in this one, but in some of these programs, we sort of, you know, cherry-pick, you know, kind of like your top students and whatever. And I think there's a role and a place for that. But there's so many other students, in my mind, who are kind of average students who I think could rise to excellence as a result of these kind of involvements. And that's true regardless of color and or income. And so I think those are the kind of things we also have to talk about. You know, is there sort of a universal approach here that we could fashion to create greater opportunities for greater numbers of students?
I kind of like the idea of the leadership one, right, where you know you really can take kids that, you know, just the typical student, but really develop leadership skills in students too. Today is FFA Day at the Capitol, and that's the Future Leaders of Agriculture folks. And every time I meet those kids, they have a program that is really rooted in leadership skills and responsibility and whatever. And every time I meet those kids, I'm so impressed with their maturity. And that organization requires a lot of leadership responsibility. And, you know, I can see, you know, an FFA organization starting to, you know, be a framework, too, for a lot of opportunities for kids. There's a lot of those good organizations like that. And that does. Sometimes it's not all the head knowledge that gets you ahead in life. It's a lot of it is a lot of other qualities, too, that come with it. So. Thank you. Really appreciate those comments, Representative Mariani. I think, unless there are any other testifiers, we need to move on to our next bill. This will be laid over for consideration in the K-12 bill. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My comment, or my question for Professor Lanigan was just a side one, but my main one that I was on the list for all along, I haven't got a chance to make, and that is, you know, I'm a big proponent, as people know here, for gifted and talented education. Mm-hmm. And I think anything we can do is better than nothing, but I'm very concerned that this is all we're looking at here in this committee for gifted and talented students. And it segues in with, I'm glad I came after Representative Mariani, because he made, I think, the most compelling statement here so far this morning, and that is we need to challenge all of our students, and gifted and talentedness is a continuum. And as soon as we do everything outside of school, after school, you know, with private funding, taking into account the cherry picking and the self-selection that goes on, we do not meet the needs of the kids who can't make those choices, don't have families who can get them there. You know, we are really self-selecting. I know that there's efforts made to broaden it, but until we have gifted and talented education in the classroom during the day, for all kids, we're never going to quite cut it. And there's evidence that shows, research that we've heard about, that if you have gifted and talented education being taught to who some would say would be the elite, that the other kids listening, you know, like my mother when she went to a one-room country school, you know, who can listen and learn and benefit, and kids that you would very much not even think were gifted can benefit, all kids benefit from challenging activities in the classroom. And I know that our Commissioner Yecky agrees with that, and I've heard her talk about that, and I've read things that she's written about that and read summaries of speeches she's given, and I know that many know that I've been critical of the Commissioner, but not on this topic. And I know that she raised a lot of hopes of people in the gifted and talented community that we would actually do something that wasn't outside of school, wasn't on Saturday, and so forth. But now this is all I see right here. And I commend Representative Severson and others for doing this. It's not that I would denigrate this. I wouldn't. I think it's better than nothing. Everything is better than nothing. But I just question why we don't have the will to do something during the day that would benefit the continuum of children, some who we might think were lower-level learners would benefit by these challenging activities being in the room. And my question then, Representative Segrin, is for Ms. Ani, because I notice we have this, probably this name, Scholars of Distinction, came from the same genesis as the Standards of Distinction, which many of us were very excited about, and that would have been during the day, challenging all kids. And I know that they went out the window with funding and the profile of learning and all of that. But did your committee look at anything? And is it, why aren't we doing something for all kids during the day? Why is this just, we hope we can find private funding and it's all outside?
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative Breiling, I just need to correct one misunderstanding. This was a name change only. It went from Standards of Distinction to Scholars of Distinction only because people thought this program would get confused with the high school or standards leading up to high school. So it went, that there was a name change. But always the intent was that this would include experiences outside of the school as well as inside. So it was never meant to be a real tight program that is highly sequential and dictated and that the school has to offer. So it's meant to be more flexible than that.
Madam Chair, but my concern is that what is there for this program that's inside the school? You know, do we have any differentiated curriculum? Do we have any challenging activities during the day, Monday through Friday, in the school that the kids who aren't in these programs could benefit from?
Right. Madam Chair, Representative Greiling, in the framework itself for each specialty, it lists a number of ways that curriculum can be enhanced, if you will, or differentiated to meet the needs of a range of expertise. So, yes, that is addressed in the framework. What isn't there is a dictate, if you will, that you must do this, you must do that. But here is a suggested sequence of differentiation of curriculum, enrichments, acceleration modes that can help promote expertise in this area. It's not required, but it's suggested.
And Madam Chair, final question.
Mr. Professor Lanigan maybe wanted to
comment. Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say that with the Geography Scholars Program, it's conceived of as the tip of a pyramid, so to speak, and we have in-school activities, a non-competitive geographers fair, which we sponsor with the Science Museum, and students are invited to come with their class activities into this fair. The fair is judged, mm-hmm. but there are no prizes given. The students are given interaction. And then the Geography B comes for those students who want to get into the competition at a little higher grade level. So we, as part of our program, and if you look into the standards process, I think everyone will do this. There's a series of things which were called in the old days scaffolding. I don't know if that term is still a term of art, but basically a set of activities in school and outside of school that would bring people up to the level to be ready to do the standards program.
Okay, and then, Madam Chair, my final question. What is there, anything in here or is anything being done? I don't see anything in here for helping teachers access that differentiation and have staff development so they can, you know, because teachers are so busy, unless we make it easy for them, they just don't do that. They just aren't able to do it.
Teachers are indeed incredibly busy. We run, however, workshops on Saturdays throughout the state, one-day workshops, and then we offer about 8 weeks of summer institute that's free for teachers and carries McAllister graduate credit. Those are programs for incorporating reading and geography for K-8 and then more specific geography content sessions for secondary teachers, middle school and high school.
Optional?
optional, yes. But we try to reward them as best we can.
Yes, Ms. Downey.
Madam Chair and Representative Greiling, each framework, a requirement of the people who drafted the frameworks, was to include resources for teachers, special tips, considerations that you ought to keep in mind if you want to sponsor this at the school level. For example, and then training opportunities, other kinds of professional development were arranged. For example, in our only truly ongoing one right now, geography, they found that a big deficit area was GIS, and so they had to rapidly mobilize folks to teach geography teachers around the state how to implement GIS technology in the classroom and how to work with their students on that, because that's very important in geographic application in today's world. So those kinds of professional development opportunities are addressed in the frameworks, but again, they'll need to be continually updated.
Assistant Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Greiling raises a really good point about gifted education and its importance for all students, but particularly those who are gifted and talented in schools. In my experience as someone who's been working in Minnesota schools, I think the focus on gifted education has languished over the last 7-8 years. Maybe longer in the minds of some. This commissioner has brought a real emphasis on gifted education, which Representative Greiling recognizes. We are looking, in fact, we have reallocated and looked with our limited funding to be able to bring in another full-time person who would work in the department with outreach on gifted education resources. The commissioner herself has attended the Minnesota Council of Gifted and Talented. They're thrilled that the department is putting this kind of effort and energy and interest in. And, of course, there is in the department bill, and I know other bills, focusing on how we can expand gifted identification in schools. So we really understand that. And I think because I'm lucky enough to work in the Office of Academic Excellence, that new position will report to one of the directors with whom I work, Beth Downey, and she, of course, has a marvelous reputation in the state because she was a gifted ed specialist at the department for many years. So, thank you.
We do know that, Ms. Downey, that you've been a very strong advocate. Thank you. With that, I think we need to move on to our next bill. Thank you so much for your information.
Thank you.
That was really very enjoyable, and it's real exciting to see the geography program moving forward. I'm excited about that. Representative Severson?
Just one final note, Madam Chair. I think the key word in this particular program is motivation. Mm-hmm. You know, we will identify those that are motivated to move forward, and that's a cross spectrum. That doesn't, you know, that goes across all lines, gender, and race. And I think this is the avenue that we in education, I'm excited about this because there were two individuals that I talked to when I was door knocking who were frustrated with the school system because they had high achieving children who were being stifled. And I think this program really begins to bring to the forefront the need to service those children and to be able to bring forth the potential that we have in our school systems at all levels. So I think this is a great community partnership with the education system, and I'm excited about seeing what this bill does in the future, and thank you for your hearing the bill and the consideration.
Thank you. The next bill before us is House File 1999. Representative Cornish. And I'll move House File 1999 to be before us for consideration.
Madam Chair, I have an author's amendment that
all
you
right.
should have a copy of A4-954 in
all
front
right.
of you. I'd like to move that.
All right, I'll move that for you. Do you want to explain the amendment?
The amendment, Madam Chair and members, basically puts in another term, charter schools, along with districts and cooperating districts. That's the major portion of it. And when you get down to line 18, it also adds a requirement that the school district boards or charter school governing boards must approve the proposed plan prior to submission to the state as a grant request for planning. This amends House File 1999, which is a relates to school innovation and cooperative planning grants. Well, that's the amendment, Madam Chair.
All right. Are there any questions on the amendment? If not, all in favor say aye. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposition? The amendment is adopted. All right, now you can go ahead and explain your bill.
Hey, Madam Chair, what I have here is the Governor's Initiative, House File 1999. And for the sake of brevity, I understand we've got at least four people to testify. So I'll give it a brief introduction, and then I'll let you introduce the people, because I haven't got the list of the people that have volunteered to testify.
All right.
As of yet.
I will be glad to do that for you.
Hey, Madam Chair and members, this is a bill that will provide for planning grants for the school districts or cooperating school districts or service cooperatives. And what it means is that oftentimes right now in our school district, we find a duplication of services. You'll have several districts clustered near each other that are doing the same things. Services they might be providing are ECFE services. Other function is payroll or human services, food services. Facility maintenance functions, and even collaborative purchasing agreements. This bill would provide funding to a cooperating, and two districts or more could cooperate together and go in these services together. At that time, they would put in an application to the department for this grant money, which would assist them and probably name one of the districts as a primary planner and operator of whatever project out of those I listed or others would be available, and then which districts would help out and supplement it. One would take charge. And in this way, they could cooperate among their school districts on one of these subjects, such as community ed or whatever it might happen to be, and save money and allow their funding to be used for other purposes. There's also a reporting provision in the bill. Those working in cooperation would have to report to the department August 1st of each year their progress and cost savings. As you'll notice in the bill, the amount of funding is blank, and I understand that there'll be another person here to testify that to that. So I'll turn it over to your first testifier that you wish to present.
Mr. Marcus.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we have as witnesses here today, we are fortunate to have Dr. Marianne Nelson, Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Education. We have Assistant Commissioner Raleigh Morrood, as you may know. He's joined the department recently, probably better known as the Superintendent of Bemidji, speaking to us from a rural perspective and what this means from a rural district. That's my understanding you also have Lee Warren and Tom Watson. May have some others. The representative did a good summation of the bill. I think it's worth noting that the state used to fund cooperative grants, not grants so much as set aside dollars to be used for districts to purchase services and goods that were gotten cooperatively. That set aside money was removed some years back. But I think it shows a long-standing interest in the legislature and the idea of incenting districts to do the very best that they can with the resources that they have so that they have as much in the way of resources as possible for bolstering their instructional programs. This is important for all districts, but you can see why it's particularly key for districts that maybe don't have the student population and the revenue that comes with it. That other districts might have. This was envisioned as a bill that would bring forward the opportunity for districts to get together, and we've included charter schools to make it clear that they can also participate. The cooperation would involve the delivery of services, and the amendment excluded the merger of instructional services, so that should be clear. Now we're looking at the merger or coordination of non-instructional programs specifically. And at that point, I think I will I'll turn it over to Assistant Commissioner Mulrood and Assistant Commissioner Nelson and then your other witnesses.
Before we move on, I think there may be a correction, and I'm not sure, to the amendment that we just adopted. And I want to ask Ms. Larson if she can help us with that. On the amendment, it says on page, on line 16, page 1, that after districts, we should insert on line 23, cooperating districts. But that's already there in the original bill. Should it not be our cooperating charter schools? Okay. Mm-hmm. So we need to amend the bill, the amended bill, I guess, to strike. How should we do that? Do it on the amendment or on the bill now, Ms. Larson, as far as process goes? Amend the amendment? Okay. To strike on line 17, school districts, and insert charter schools. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposition. The amendment to the amendment is adopted. All right. Now we can have the testimony. And the first one we have is, do you have a, okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'll make my comments very brief so you can hear from the expert testimony that's coming. But last fall, Governor Pawlenty and Superintendent Rick Dressen of Alexandria convened a forum. And it was a regional forum up in Alexandria for school leaders, for teachers, for principals, for community leaders, chamber leaders, and it was to talk about the future of rural schools. I attended it. I had just come to the department after working in the public school system. And I was amazed at how the day unfolded with people coming together and talking about what's important to us about rural Minnesota. How do we keep the lifeblood of the school districts healthy, the communities healthy, at a time when many districts are experiencing decline in enrollment? And one of the things that was done that day, Madam Chair, was we broke up into groups, small groups across several rooms, and we were all assigned ideas. The group I was in raised this idea of innovation and cooperative planning grants and how much they want to, as dollars get tighter, pull together in creative ways how they can keep their school strong, their community strong, by doing this kind of collaboration. As we know, the resources are very tight now for schools. We read that in the paper. The state budget deficit is getting obviously much, much attention. And as a superintendent in Fridley, in my 9 years, out of those 9 years, 8 of those years, I was leading a district effort to try to reduce costs. And it got very difficult, and I found myself as a school leader, as many will say behind me here, that you want always to focus as much of the dollars as you can on the direct instruction, but we need support programs for those because those are what also make for strong, quality school districts. So the fact that half of our state school districts were experiencing declining enrollment in 2000 to 2001, they need to find greater cost efficiencies. In a time of budget shortfall, every school district needs to find cost efficiencies. As expectations go up for student learning, for accountability for all of us to do what we can with those resources so that students are learning, all students, all subgroups are learning, we need to accommodate that pressure and help schools with this kind of an initiative. I'm particularly excited that it's open enough to allow creativity. It expands the focus on many areas of non-instructional programs. And one example that was a big interest that I've heard about, one of the providers listed there is community education programs. ECFE is a community education program in several districts. So in order to, let's say a group of school districts wanted to coordinate the delivery of ECFE services, they could seek a planning grant. The grant would allow them to negotiate the most appropriate process for determining how this would work, who would be the primary service provider, how the logistics would work. So we think it just offers a lot of potential for spreading the dollars even better across school districts and to serve students. I would now, Madam Chair, if it's okay, turn it over to our my fellow Assistant Commissioner, Raleigh Morrow.
Yes, thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. It's a privilege to be here. As mentioned earlier, I wear two hats. I am the superintendent in Bemidji, and that was on Monday and Tuesday. And yesterday, today, and tomorrow, I'm an assistant commissioner. And as we finish out the academic year, I'll be 100% with the department. It's a privilege to support this bill. It's something I believe in very much. Less than 3 weeks ago, I was sitting in a meeting in Bemidji, and one of the area superintendents, the superintendent of Kellyer, came up and said, "Hey, Raleigh, remember when we did that deal a few years ago in a different state where we went to cooperative purchasing? We need to get to the co-op and see if we can get that done here." In that area, at that time, we had just moved from having to use common carriers to deliver all the equipment and supplies to UPS, which made it available then to small schools. Prior to that, group purchasing was only available to large schools that could buy in sufficient quantities to justify the freight. And he said, "We need to get that going here," and I agree with him. This is not just about efficiencies, though, in purchasing. It's also about dealing with the technology or the technical nature of the services we need to provide, health and safety services, and sharing those. It's an advantage that needs to be looked at not just from the very small schools, but also from the large schools. Bemidji is one of the larger schools in greater Minnesota. But as we face declining enrollment, we struggle each year with what can we keep. We still would like to have a health and safety officer. We still want to have a full-time human resource person. And so as we downsize, we have the opportunity then to work with our neighboring districts and share some of these services and then keep a high quality of expertise available to all the districts in the area. So I think it's a good bill. I think it's as valuable to large districts as it is to small districts in that it pulls things together and it gives us an opportunity for efficiencies that we very much need to search out every time we turn around.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Moore. We want to bring down Lee Warren and Brene Hasbargen, if you two want to come down, and then Representative Slawik, did you have a question?
No, I'm sure a clarifying question. I thought in current law that we did provide for service cooperatives, so I wanted to clarify that, and don't they plan on a regional basis, and wouldn't this be a duplication of something that's already being done?
They do, Representative Slawik, I think they do some cooperative purchasing. But I think this would be on not just service co-ops, but it would be school districts themselves that may want to coordinate some of their purchasing, or not necessarily purchasing. I think they do a lot of purchasing stuff, but this would be personnel issues. This could be a number of other things that maybe service co-ops don't do. And maybe we can ask Mr. Warren that because he is part of the service co-op. He is one, so that might be a good question for him.
Madam Chair, yes, I would like, I hope you can answer that because the question is, are we duplicating it? If we can do it already for some services, why can't we do it for these, and why do we need this?
Madam Chair, Representative Slaughter, the service cooperatives are in legislation supposed to do planning on a regional basis, and it's our job to do that. And frankly, there are some issues that we run into that are so unique and so different that we've got to try to find creative ways to overcome them. I've been an administrator now for 25 years, and I've paired two school groupings, one four-school grouping, and all of which led to some kind of consolidation or permanent arrangement. And I'll tell you that, and I think you would agree, there are problems overcoming that kind of cooperation, our fear of losing what you have, money to get it started. Sometimes you need to spend some money in order to save money in the long run. And sometimes those things prevent that kind of cooperation from happening. Service cooperatives often are given the direction, can you solve this problem for us? An example, in Benson, Minnesota, an entrepreneur moved in with a horse ranch that was specifically for adjudicated girls. We didn't know who was coming in or who was going out or how often they would be there. the local district found it was difficult to deal with, and so they turned to us and asked us to figure out a way to staff it and put it together, which we've done. Was it difficult? Yeah, but we managed to get it done. Many times other ideas like that are coming up that we run into that are hard, and sometimes a little startup money is just enough to get it over the top.
Representative Goodwin.
I have a couple questions. One is, you know, I agree that a lot of this is already available in law, but what isn't available that I think would really be helpful would be if the cities could coordinate with the school districts on some of these issues, like school purchase or like good purchasing goods and community education. For example, one of my school districts, St. Anthony Village, the community education was done by the school district, all of it, but the city was helping pay for it and providing facilities at times and so forth. Those kinds of things are going on, but they could do that before now because they lost so much aid last year, both the school district and the city. They're trying to figure out what they're actually going to be able to offer in that area. I would assume that that's an issue in rural areas as well. And so I think that would be new. That would be innovative, and we should encourage that as much as possible. But what I want to know is what are the amounts, the range of these grants expected to be, and where is the money going, and the total cost, and where is the money going to come from?
All right. We have Ms. Hasbargen. Did you want to comment?
Madam Chair and members, Brene Hasbargen with the Minnesota Rural Education Association. I want to thank the governor for this initiative, for him coming to Alexandria last summer and starting the process. And then I want to thank Representative Cornish for authoring this bill. I passed out a little bit earlier a note card that looks like this. And what I wanted you to see that on behalf of our 150 members, how important two issues or two of the governor's initiatives really are to us. Because of the third and the fourth bullet at the top of that card, the first one calls for internet equity, and you will be looking at that issue within a week or so. But the fourth one does deal with incentives to pilot the reorganization of administrative and financial services. And for us, the key word there are the incentives, because we think that that will lead to a lot of action in rural Minnesota on these issues. And so with me today are three leaders of MREA. Lee Warren happens to be one of our past presidents. Lloyd Sturwall, who is the superintendent at Grand Rapids, is our current president. And then also here today is John Nygaard, who is a business manager for two districts in west central Minnesota. We just like their stories to help you see what the potential for this kind of encouragement really is out there, as we work to become more efficient and keep more dollars in our classrooms.
Thank you, Ms. Hasbargen. I'm sorry. Representative Bernardi, you had a question?
I didn't. Could I get my question answered, Madam Chair?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you had your question
answered. No, I didn't. My question was, what's the total amount, what's the range of the grants and the total expected cost and where the money is going to come from? Then I would ask that to Representative Cornish.
At this point, I have no idea. No, I was not plugged in on the finance, but I've turned it over to the person with the answer.
Madam Chair, representatives, that amount will be better determined once the budget forecast has come out. But what we hope to do is have about a dozen or so grants, and we wanted to make them of sufficient amount to be able to consent this sort of behavior, but we also wanted to have the flexibility that you might give more to a bigger and more bold idea and a smaller amount to a smaller group. So very much dependent upon the budget forecast.
I'm sorry, Representative Goodwin, I didn't realize you didn't have your question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we are discussing this issue, but we don't really have a clue how much money the total amount's going to be, where it's going to come from, or what the range is going to be. So has there been any research really done on what it would cost for some of these projects, or do we have any clue?
Madam Chair, Representative, the amounts of that an individual project would cost is dependent upon the scope of what it is that they propose. Of course, there is cost in getting people together and talking and planning, and that's what this bill tries to deal with. As one of the witnesses pointed out, sometimes you have to spend a little money to save money. And so that's the concept behind here. But as far as being able to specify exactly how much at this point, no. There are ballpark figures that the department has thrown around in this idea and the discussion of this idea. However, we're not in a situation right now that we can say a specific amount until we have that budget forecast.
All right, Representative Bernardi, did you have a question?
Yes, Madam Chair. I know that we're getting people from the rural communities here, and Dr. Nelson might want to listen to this comment too, because we face this in the inner ring suburbs with declining enrollment and the pressure to merge with other school districts. So I'm hoping the spirit of intent is to look at all school districts, because I do know that the inner ring suburbs and rural Minnesota face a number of the same issues, including growing poverty rates. And one of the things that I'm looking on this bill that I think is important is the report portion of the bill on the second page. And it doesn't mention anything. It just talks about reporting any cost savings. But on the other side, it's the spirit of intent of this bill is to free up dollars to put into instructional-related expenditures. So I would like to see that in the report that, okay, if there is cost savings, we need to know that, but we also need to know how these dollars are being put back into instructional-related activities. So I don't know if we could do a friendly amendment or later on change that, but I think that's really important.
Representative Bernardi, we will take your suggestion to heart and try to work out some language. We'll get to you after. Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just looking at the on line 8, it talks about Shell Award planning grants, and then line 15, it says the grant may be used to determine which district is a primary service, et cetera.
Yeah, Representative Wardle, that language was struck, so you have to look at your amendment. It would say the service cooperative districts or cooperating charters may use the grant to determine.
Oh, Madam Chair, so the startup cost is allowed in this language. I just wanted to see if that...
Representative Wardlow, what's your question?
Well, he was talking about, the Superintendent Warner was talking about startup costs, which is different than just planning money.
Mr. Warren?
Madam Chair, if I might, let me give an example of an issue that we're wrestling with. Right now, legal costs for districts run an hourly, about $185 an hour, portal to portal. And frankly, it's more expensive, I think, to do that kind of hourly work for some of us. And a number of superintendents came and said, is there a way that we can hire our own attorney and share them across the deal and then split the cost and just have a cost basis? We're working on it, but it's tough to get a guarantee because nobody knows exactly what their future costs are going to be, but we need to do some research and spend some time doing that. I think that might be an example where we'd spend a little bit of money to research to find out whether or not that indeed would be the case. That would be O1 money out of the general fund that would be used for educational purposes, because that's where the teachers come from.
Okay. Thank you, Manager. That answers my question.
Thank you. Representative Heidbergen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And in addressing Representative Connie Bernardi there, in regards to, there's a difference of play here in regards to declining enrollment. In your area, you have a little more property wealth. In the 2001 tax reform bill, what we did, just for example, you have a lake home out there in Pope County. And what basically happened in 2001, there's a trade-off. A lot of the people from the metro area have houses along Amelia and Villard and Lake Minnewaska, which is of the most value to that school district, and that is exempt from any school bond levy or And again, at the same time, there's a trade-off. The farmers out there, some of the big farmers, got all of their property off, except for 3.5 acres of where their homestead is on. So of the property that's out there for that school, the tax, most of it is exempt from any school bond issue. So again, it makes it very difficult to pass one. And that they're not only declining enrollment, they're also a property-poor district. There's nothing to put no one to pass it on to. Thank you.
All right, Representative Goodwin, did you have another question?
I do, and it pertains to the questions I asked before on the cost on this. If we have a negative forecast tomorrow, and the governor has alluded to a big negative forecast in the last couple of months, will we still be able to fund these grants? And if so, how? I want to make sure that it's not going to come out of instructional student dollars or someplace that we're already having a problem getting enough money right now.
Assistant Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative Goodwin, until that supplemental budget comes through, it's very difficult for me and inappropriate, actually, to make a commitment. But I can tell you that the focus is to try to do this in a way that promotes or gets at the resistance that some school districts may have to this kind of cooperative planning. In my own experience, for example, if I was to try to do sharing of financial services across districts, I can't imagine I would need more than a couple thousand to facilitate pulling that together in terms of meetings and discussions and doing maybe some backup reports. I think it really depends on the level of cooperation that's involved. And as you think about it, there's a continuum. Representative Breiling talked about a continuum. It might be something very small and focused, which is only a couple of thousand. It could be something that's more broad, which would take more kinds of support and funding that goes with it.
Well, I'm having a hard time getting these questions answered, Dr. Nelson. I'm trying to find out if we have a negative forecast tomorrow, and I think the governor pretty much knows what it's going to be at this point. Will we still be able to fund these grants? I'm not saying this is a bad idea. I think it's a wonderful idea. I think we can already do it. It probably needs some money, but I think it's a good idea. But I'm just trying to find out if we have a negative forecast, since it's so dependent on that forecast, if we'll be able to fund these grants.
I think we'll have to look to the governor's office for the leadership on that. But good leaders try to plan, even in times of scarce resources, for what are the most promising ideas. What we're talking about here is paying some money out to save money in the long run, or better, direct money in the long run. That's all I
need
to say right now.
We need to move on. We have, is Mr. Steerwall here? From? Okay, and then we want to have John Nygaard come. He's here. Great. Okay, you are anticipating. And then we do have, Representative Slavik, do you want to hold your question until they're done? Okay, thanks. All right, go ahead.
I could start, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm Lloyd Steerwall, Superintendent of Schools in 318 Grand Rapids, Minnesota. And just a little story that we're experiencing outstate as well as some of the inner suburbs. We have lost 1,000 kids, 1,000 students in the last 10 years, and we've had to manage decline, and we're probably not the poster child for this bill because we had to go ahead and do it, and it was difficult to do. It was difficult because my community, which is the larger community in the county, and there's three other school districts in the county and some surrounding, my community thought we ought to, you know, execute a hostile takeover and just do it. And as you might guess, that's not. The other communities, and Greg knows this, he's from Grand Rapids, one of the pastimes of those other communities is to kind of keep an open wound about how they feel about the larger county seat. And that's really true in most of rural Minnesota, large communities, county seats, and smaller schools. And so that's the situation we had. Our region of the state, I think, lost more students than any other region. You know, we lost a significant number of students. We needed to talk, and we needed to get together and talk. And every time Greenway Hockey beat Grand Rapids Hockey, that set that discussion back a year or two. And those are some realities of small communities. You know, that's just the issue. So, but what happened is we got a number of superintendents who we could get in the room if we didn't say a word that started with the consolidation. I mean, we couldn't say consolidation. And I think the governor is extremely aware of that issue. And so as a result, we tried a number of things that, you know, putting our boards together and having large meetings and we used the Northeast Higher Ed, group to come in and try to work with us. We're across the region from our service cooperative, so that didn't work. And finally, one day, we all got together and said that maybe we need to hire a third party and create some kind of entity that doesn't threaten us, because everyone's threatened with one loss of one job in one community. And we're not talking superintendents. We're talking bus drivers. We're talking mechanics. We're talking all other kinds of ancillary services that we need to collaborate on, that we can't afford to be redundant or repetitive on. And so as we started to do this, we got together and we hired a consultant. And we agreed to a dollar amount per pupil, and we're working with that person now. So when I say we're not the poster child, we've gone ahead and done some of these things. It's very threatening to spend money in a declining economy with declining student enrollment, suggesting you might save money down the road. And we're still in that venue. We know we're going to save money. It's very threatening. Two other districts didn't join us because they wouldn't spend the money. They wouldn't spend the money to lose what they thought would be loss of jobs in their community. And the sad fact is they're going to lose those jobs anyway. They're going to lose as we get smaller. We can't afford to be funded at our old level, and we can't afford the level of programming we had. So we're going to have to do some things differently. So what we've done so far is we've put together programs that look at us as service providers, us being 318 in some cases and other districts in other cases, and we didn't stop at instructional. I know that's a key issue for people, but once you start to talk, everything gets on the table. So instructional wasn't the fear. We're not going to close buildings. We're not going to, Greenway did beat Grand Rapids this year. So we're not going to close buildings. And I think that what will happen, though, is that, we can look at administrative units. We can look at payroll systems. We can look at transportation services and mechanics, mechanical and maintenance and community ed. We already, have four districts or four, schools looking at one community ed program. We've done that. That's accomplished. We're looking at food service. It's a process, and we really think we're making strong progress. And we're very comfortable with it, and I just want you to know that our consultant, Tom Watson, is here today with us, and we're real appreciative that he's been able to look at it from a little he's not attached to a community. And so they don't suspect him. It doesn't look like the hostile takeover that I referred to a few minutes ago. And these are things that need to happen, on behalf of our very survival. And I think we understand that now as communities. Thank you.
Thank you. We have only about 5 minutes, so I would like Mr. Togstad to make some comments. And then, Mr. Watson, if you want to come up and, just add some brief comments, then we really need to move on. Mr. Togstad? Wait a minute. I'm missing John Nygaard. I'm sorry, John.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'll give you a quick success story of how this works, and allude to the earlier question about service cooperative participation. I'm the business manager at West Central Area Schools, serving the communities of Elder Lake, Wendell, Barrett, Hoffman, and Kensington, one of the districts that Lee Warren was involved with. Thank you. I don't have to swallow the mic. One of the districts that Lee Warren was involved with in helping to get together. Our service cooperative put out a call for assistance from one of the smaller districts in our area and wondered if there was another district that would be willing to participate in a shared service arrangement. And that's how we got together. The fact of the matter is Lloyd Sterl presented very well the resistance concept that's involved in getting districts together. This one works pretty well because the Rotsay district, which was the smaller district that contracted our services, is actually two districts away from us. I live in a central location, so we were not a threat. The West Central area was not a threat to Rotsay. And perhaps maybe the dollar incentive here involved in this bill would provide a little more
encouragement for districts that are a little closer together to work this arrangement. But the arrangement that we have is that I serve the Rotsay School District one day a week as a business manager. I'm able to perform for them some of the technical assistance functions that they do not have in-house, that they can't afford. They simply cannot, with 235 students, afford a full-time business manager. And so it works out very well for me to come one day a week and assist them with such things as budgeting and planning and financial forecasting, compliance reporting, things like that. It's a win-win for us at West Central Area. We save some money because they pay 20% of my freight, and we provide the expertise to Rotsay, and it works out very well. I think I'll just let it go at that. It is a good situation for both school districts, and we're very pleased with how it worked.
Thank you. Now we have Keith Togstad, the Superintendent St. James, and Mr.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'd like to share with you what we're doing in St. James, and I'll do that quickly. You have a handout, I think, that was given to you that you can look at later, but we've been doing this for several years. And initially it started out in community education and ECFE, and then we have now picked up some other areas and sharing with the neighboring school districts. We've been doing their business affairs for them, and that too is working out very well. I want to go back though and just talk about community education, because that was mentioned here earlier. One of the things we find in the rural areas is that we often come to the Twin Cities for field trips, and we can't justify that from one of the smaller communities alone. But when we start a bus, and I'm using the example of my handout here in Butterfield, that would pick up five students as an example to go into St. James and pick up another 10 or 15, then go to Medelia and pick up another 20 or so, field trip then becomes feasible to come into the Twin Cities. And we do this regularly, and we have been doing this for several years. One of the things also that we've been working on in our area is having a common calendar with the school districts that are participating in. So when we have speakers that we can pay for the speaker together, the staff can get together and compare notes. We've done a number of things in here that you can peruse at your convenience and so on, but I will point out now with the age of technology, it's much easier too. And one of the things we're doing in the Butterfield School District, we have time clocks in their school district, which is 8 miles from ours, and that when the employees swipe their card in Butterfield, it automatically comes into the computer in St. James. So with the aid of technology, it does work, and we're making it work. And so I really encourage your support of this bill. It will work. I think we're living proof of it.
Thank you. And Mr. Wasson, do you have any comments that you want to make?
I have two. I assume that you're getting ready to go to lunch or somewhere else.
More committees. So.
And number two, I'm living in the Twin City area, and I think the comments that I would like to make, I would ask you to reschedule, if you will, because I'd make myself available to you. The questions raised by the representatives of the metropolitan area, I think I can give you some firsthand examples of things that work. I took the time a couple days ago to research your communities and the school districts and the cities that you represent. I can give you some actual experiences of things we've done across the state. As Superintendent Sturwall indicated, we're doing some things up there. And the thing I want to talk with you about, and I think it takes more time, is the approach we're taking in Itasca County, which I beg to suggest is going to have to occur elsewhere in the state of Minnesota. We're not sitting and taking a look at the delivery of local government services as we have been doing for probably the last two decades. We're actually talking about sitting down and formulating a strategic focus. We're talking about the possibility of some serious redesign to delivery systems. So, for example, when we talk about a regional transportation system, a regional food service system, that can apply in the metropolitan area very easily. It can apply in St. Anthony, it can apply in Columbia Heights, etc. And the thing I also could tell you is that collectively, those school districts that we're talking about in the Iron Range, the four or the six, if you include Hill City and Raymer, range from 4,500 students to 300 students. And I know there's a lot of questions about why a 300 school district needs a student school district needs a superintendent, a business manager, all those kinds of things. I'm not going to go there. I'm getting too old, and I'm not going to fight that battle. But what I would submit to you is that the stereotype of cutting and if you will, sharing resources by simply having one business manager across a region or one superintendent across a region, I'm not convinced is a solution. It's one people ought to take a look at. There are bigger dollars to be gained and more efficiencies to be had and better economics of scale to be had in looking at transportation, food service, technology, curriculum administration. For example, we're going to have four school districts that I'll bet you in 2 years will actually have a common staff development among their elementary schools. They'll be doing curriculum review together. They'll be actually selecting materials together. They might, amazing, I said to Mr. Marcus on the phone, can you imagine three school districts actually agreeing to select the same science texts for their elementary schools and getting the advantage of buying some materials on economies of scale? We're looking at petroleum products beyond the school districts, cities, counties. Grand Rapids happens to have a large DNR, MnDOT operation. We can't lose sight of community ed and the higher education system that exists in these communities. I happen to be mayor of a city here in the metropolitan area for the last 4 years, and I've been involved as elected official for 14 years. I've taken that experience into these same communities. For example, my cost for police and fire protection in this community that I live in is probably less per dollar than it is anywhere in the state of Minnesota, and response times are still pretty damn good. And the point I'm going to make is, in this regard, we've been doing that for a long time, so we don't have the fire chief at the head of the 4th of July parade with the name of my city on it. It's a shared environment. We have 7 communities in police that contract for that service. We have 3 in fire, and we discovered we can get awfully good service. We have fire stations distributed through our communities, but we have 1 fire chief. We have 1 police chief who happens to be the county sheriff. We have shared building officials. So as I looked at those applications, and I looked at what I knew about the particular school districts on the Iron Range, you might ask, why did I pick that particular group of school districts? Because I had a previous working relationship with Mr. Sturwall, the superintendent in Greenway, and the superintendent in Deer River. So I was probably less hostile. And number 2, I agreed to buy them lunch. The bottom line is I bought them lunch, and I agreed it would be at my nickel, and I was not going to insist on getting compensation at all until we figured out whether we had something that would work. So I'd be happy to come back and give you some very specific examples of things that work, and they work in lots of communities. These are collectively, in my opinion, insolvent school districts taken as a whole. They don't have the kinds of reserves, the rate of increase in revenues as compared to costs, their reduction in enrollments. If you put that picture into any kind of a fiscal model, it's an insolvent business, and you have to approach it as part of a redesign. End of my comments for the moment. I'll take questions.
Thank you, Mr. Weston. I think we will probably try to bring you back. We have Representative Greiling and Erickson, and then we need to adjourn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Watson and others, thank you for this idea. I don't think we're debating whether it's a good idea or not. We all think it is a good idea. In fact, many of us voted to protect the Board of Innovation and Cooperation, which was abolished and unfunded, and that would have included, Representative Goodwin, as you recall, cities and counties and school districts. It did all these things. Representative Irv Anderson introduced it about 10 years ago, and due to budget cuts, it was being cut. So our questions today are not pertaining to being convinced of the worthiness of the idea. We've always been for it. We protected it, and we lost. And now to see people up here proposing it as if we need to be convinced, we're just questioning where's the money coming from, given everyone has still signed these no new tax pledges, and we know there's going to be a continuing deficit tomorrow, whether it's big or small, it's going to be there. So that's what this debate is about. It's just the same as with the Minnesota Academic Excellence Foundation bill that we just had. That was also cut virtually out, and they're now surviving on life support, as Assistant Commissioner Nelson said. So we agree with that idea too, but we are just thinking that good ideas alone are not good enough unless they're funded. This creating this idea of Representative Cornish's without giving it any money wouldn't be too much better than having abolished the Board of Innovation and Cooperation. So I hope that all of you who are looking for seed money for very good ideas will also be making sure that somehow they are funded and then participate in what can be cut in order to carve out that funding.
Representative Erickson, did you have a
Thank
question?
Thank you, Chair Segan. I just wanted to know, to what extent have you discussed combining districts under a superintendent rather than each district having a superintendent? Could there be a cooperative effort in that direction, too?
Mr. Watson is shaking his head, yes.
I'm probably the only one non-superintendent here that can speak to that. I think there are clearly opportunities to do that. The note that I make to myself when I worked on this, and I've been working with local governments for 35 years, so it's been quite some years. The thing I've learned is that the old axiom that one size doesn't fit all really doesn't work. You have to look at each situation, and I think in the example we've got here with five or six school districts, I think you will see some shared business office. I think you'll see some shared superintendencies. I think what you're going to find that's kind of exciting that I would like to spend some time more with you, the things that we've learned 6 months after we started compared to what we thought we were going to do when we first began. Now, what Superintendent Storwell did talk about instructional areas and some of the curriculum areas, those were not on our plate. In other words, our focus was all non-instructional, administrative kinds of things. And there's some real opportunities in there, and it may cause us to rethink the role of some of our educational leaders, the superintendents, such as the folks that are directors of instruction and curriculum, and that's where their strengths are, for sure, and we want to maximize that.
Thank you very, very much, Mr.
All right, thank you all for being here. We are adjourned.